Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. I'm joining you today from the UK. We're broadcasting live from England to Seattle and, of course, worldwide via the web. And it's about 8 p.m. here in the UK. I'm actually talking to you from my mother's apartment, and I share that with you only because we're as isolated as we possibly can be right now, but we may still have a little bit of background noise since we're doing this live, and maybe even an interruption, who knows. I should have been actually home in Seattle by now, but travel plans got pushed back a week because of the snow in the UK, and since I haven't done a live show this year, I was sick last week, I wanted to do this live today from England and say Happy New Year to everyone. Eric, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year, Vicki. How are things?
It kind of seems odd saying that now. It feels really late into the month already, does it, to you?
I am of the mind that you are well within your rights to say Happy New Year all the way until the 20th of January.
Okay, so I got it in time.
I think so, yeah.
So I haven't talked with you since I did the last live show in December. What's been happening with you? Anything exciting?
Well, lots of exciting changes here at the station, of course, as there always seems to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Lots of fluctuation with the programs and some new things coming on and some, sadly, shows that have been on for a long time departing. So, lots of change, but we kind of get used to that here, I think. You got to be prepared for that sort of thing.
I know. I got to wait for 2 weeks and everything changes. Of course, I had laryngitis last week. I'm still getting over it this week. I had absolutely no voice last week. We were supposed to do a live show, and for the first time ever, I lost my voice. I have to tell you a funny story because my brother and his wife invited me down to London. They were heading off to London. They said, "Do you want to come with us?" And so I went down with them for a couple of days, and the day before, I started losing my voice. And I said to my sister-in-law, I said, "Well, my brother, Colin, will be really pleased, right, because I'm losing my voice." And that's the first thing he said when he goes, "What's wrong with your voice? Are you losing it?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, good." Typical brother, right?
Right. Wow, brothers, what are they good for?
Well, he's a good guy. But I had a fun time in London, and I've never seen England, I swear. We came in on the plane from Seattle, as soon as we got to Scotland and started flying over England, the whole of Scotland and England was covered with snow. I've never seen anything like it. It was amazing. I was supposed to fly out on December 20th, and my flight got pushed back till Christmas Day, so I actually didn't get here till December 26th.
Well, this winter has been especially hard on Western Europe, I understand. It has been I've got additional friends over in the UK, and they've been telling me that this is a really different winter for them, just a lot more snow than normal.
Yeah. Well, it's gone now, and I should be heading home actually in a couple of days. So hopefully it stays away. And we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to see if we can get hold of our guests. We have a couple of guests planned for you today. Coming up later in the show, I'll be talking with Nancy Stanley, who shares the journey of truffles. He's a tiny little fellow, but he found a huge purpose in life, and he's known as a pillow with a heartbeat. First of all, we're going to try and get hold of Elise Ballard. She's an actress, independent filmmaker and producer, and she's written a new book called Epiphany. She talks about epiphanies, and some very well-known people share their epiphanies with her, and some not so well-known, but it's all very interesting stuff. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you, hopefully with Elise Ballard. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Let's play 10 questions. What is new at KKNW?
Real estate radio.
What's the show about?
Real estate?
Actually, Val, we focus on buying, selling, owning, and financing residential real estate.
That's right, at the ground level where most of us live.
Who are you guys?
Well, I'm Rob Gray, a broker in West Seattle.
And I'm Craig Goble with Cascade Pacific Mortgage.
We're both active real estate professionals, and we're in the trenches every day.
Don't miss Real Estate Radio at its new time, 2 o'clock every Thursday here on Alternative Talk 1150. Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com. And if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce at joycechapman.com.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hi, I'm Vicki St. Clair. I want to invite you to join me every Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We'll talk with innovative business leaders, medical and health professionals, authors, filmmakers, adventurers, and ordinary people leading extraordinary lives. Join me Mondays at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Check out our guest schedule at conversationslive.net and join me Mondays at noon. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Stay informed with news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour, weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. I feel a little out of practice because I haven't been here for 3 weeks. but we can't get hold of our first guest today, so no worries. We have Nancy Stanley with us, who we had planned to have with us anyway. And she's recognized as one of the modern-day animal therapy pioneers. She first introduced animal therapy to severely handicapped children and to convalescent hospitals for the elderly in 1982, after she founded an organization called Tender Loving Zoo, a nonprofit organization. And Nancy is also a wish granter for the Make-A-Wish Foundation and an advocate for all animal causes. She's written this really cute book. It's called Pillow with a Heartbeat, the heartwarming talk of a little dog who finds his big purpose. Nancy, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to
be here.
Well,
you wrote this book with Truffles, who actually is a poodle.
He is.
And let's start by just telling us a little bit about the book and why you wrote this book. You wrote it from the dog's perspective.
Yes, that's because my dog Truffles and I actually have conversations, and I know how he's thinking. Well, I wrote the book because I'm a wish granter for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and one of the little girls that I had doing a wish for inspired the story because she was so inspirational, and her bond with my dog was you just couldn't describe it. It was as though they actually talked to each other. And one day she said, "I wish your dog could talk to me in English. Can you imagine our conversation?" And this light bulb went up in my head, and I went, "Oh, I'm going to do a book and have him talk." And that's how that started. And I had no idea it was going to turn out to be such a great venture for me, but that's what I'm doing now. I'm writing.
Right. So tell us why you decided to write, why did you decide to write the book? Because this is a very personal story about the little girl. Why did you, who did you write this for?
Well, I dedicated it to Michelle Butler. That's who I dedicated, but I wrote it for everybody who loves dogs and who understands the gift that they can bring to people. And I've been involved with pet therapy since 1982. Actually, I'm the one that started it with the Tender Loving Zoo that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just become like a household word, pet therapy. It does so much for people and for the people that do it and bring their dogs and get out in the community and help others in need who need this extra love and unjudgmental and unconditional love that dogs give. And I'm sure you know, because I think you have a border collar. I read about you having a border collar.
I do. My goodness, you're well-researched. I do have a border collie.
Yeah, well, I read about that, and I know how you must feel about your dog, because they are totally intelligent and do so much for our peace of mind. And I wanted everyone to get outside their zone, their own little world, and step out into the community and pay it forward for anything that they're grateful for. They should not keep this all for themselves. They should pay it back.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the therapy side of things, Nancy, because I'm quite familiar with it, because I actually looked into it because my border collie is such a people person. He loves people, he loves children, and is extremely well behaved. And I actually thought he'd make a wonderful therapy dog. But what types of qualities does a therapy dog have to have?
Well, every dog doesn't make a good therapy dog. And what they do have to have is they have to be non-aggressive at all. They have to love everybody, everything. And they need to be like very even-tempered and very good-natured, friendly, and curious about things. And they have to be very obedient and socialize. That's very important when you first get a dog, to go out and socialize them with all kinds of people, because that makes them a perfect therapy dog. They just fit in anywhere that you go.
Mm-hmm.
And,
now, if somebody was interested, you know, thinking, well, my dog might be good for this purpose, what would they have to do? Do they have to be certified? Go through a specific training program?
Yeah. Most of the centers do require that you get your dog certified, and there's all kinds of places that you go to, and there's something called the American Kennel Club Canine Good Citizen Test that a lot of the certification places do. It tests good manners of your dog. It's not like precision training, like sit, beg, you know, shake hands, none of that stuff. But it teaches your dog good manners, or tests, make sure they have good manners, like not raiding your dining room table, or if you're going into a hospital and there's food on the patient's, you know, bed tray, they don't go and jump all over the food. Just things like that. They're very, very important. And then there's another...
That would be important.
No, they wouldn't pass very well and be good for the patients. But there's an ATT, which is the temperament test. And that kind of evaluates their breeding, not so much their training, like their traits, like what some dogs have different traits, like aggressiveness or shyness, and being able to be socialized better than others, and their instinct to protect their owner and themselves. So they're all different kinds of tests that they give you to assess whether this would be a good dog. But to me, in general, it's just an even-tempered, good, loving, friendly dog that's gentle. I haven't found any dogs that are sweet and kind that wouldn't make good therapy dogs. They just need to have maybe a little more obedience, you know, like to not bark and not be aggressive at all. But,
sure.
And especially the dogs that come out of rescue shelters, there's so many now in rescues. They make such amazing therapy dogs. It's as if they're saying thank you for saving me, and they want to help. I swear, I feel that. Like, it's very strong. I feel very strongly about that.
Right, right. So, Nancy, let's look at some of the beneficial effects that animals have on the sick. Now, typically, I think, and there may be more outlets here, but I think of dogs as going into hospitals and especially children's wards and maybe retirement homes. Where else are they used?
Well,
and
that's where we go.
We
go to the children that I see for Make-A-Wish. You know, it's like an icebreaker. And Truffles just loves everybody. But the homes for the elderly, it's an amazing. It's actually been proven, and the doctors have told me since 1982. I've been doing this a very long time. And in a minute, I'll give you an example of what this has done to some of the children. But it does help physically, medically, with patients to reduce their blood pressure. The sad people are in these homes and they're lonely, and it kind of stimulates their social sense and wanting to talk about the dog with other people, and it makes them not feel so lonely because the pets become like their companions. And
mm-hmm.
it's just beautiful to see, but it does medically do things like that, like get a lot of people off their meds, Valium and all this. You don't even need that when you have this beautiful non-judgmental creature in your lap, and you're holding them. Your stress level just goes way down, and you feel all these good euphoric feelings. And
yeah.
I've seen it over and over. And this school that I, my first, very first school that I went to before I got the animals into hospital, there was a little girl there, profoundly, profoundly handicapped and physically and mentally challenged, and she could not speak. She was 8 years old, and she just garbled. And after a few times being with Truffles, well, it wasn't Truffles. Oh, it's Freudian slip. My first dog, Freeway. She actually said the word puppy, and it got into the newspaper. And from there, it just like gangbustered this
yeah.
idea of
yeah.
animal
well,
therapy
something
really
I
worked.
You mentioned, you know, people who live alone and the lonely, there's something about having that extra heartbeat in the house, I think, that makes a difference to people.
It does, and it increases the length of, you know, your longevity. People that, they say people that have dogs live longer,
mm-hmm.
and they're healthier, and they're more grateful. I mean, it's just the dogs. My expression is be the kind of person your dog already thinks you are, because...
Right, that's a good saying, yeah. But we're talking about dogs because you wrote a book about a dog, but this also applies to cats, too, I think.
Well, cats, you know, cats do the same thing. If you're a cat lover, they can do the same exact thing. They bring you... It's any animal that brings you this unconditional love, it's just fantastic. It's changed my life.
I've also read reports where psychologists and scientists have looked at the human smile and, you know, looked at our blood pressure and our heartbeat, our resting rate, all that stuff, and said that it's one of the, when we look at children, little babies, and when we look at animals, those are the times when our smile is the most natural. It's there and we don't even know it's happening.
Yeah, well, I think that's when it started with me, when I was a little baby. And I had a German Shepherd that sat by my crib 24/7. And I was 6 when she died. And it's like she walked to school with me. This was in Florida. And it's just amazing how this sets the motion of your life. You know, once you have an attachment like that to your dog, it never goes away. I think it gets worse. I'm so addicted to Truffles that I think some people think I'm a little crazy.
I suspect you don't really care about that.
And it's okay, because it's a good crazy.
So you called this book Pillow with a Heartbeat, the heartwarming tale of a little dog who finds his big purpose. Tell us how you found Truffles. You yourself were not in a great place when you actually found Truffles, correct?
Well, I got him. I actually got him from a breeder that I advocate going to rescues now. He's 6 years old, but there are poodle rescues. But I got him from a breeder because I was actually looking for a chocolate, and I wanted a chocolate poodle. It was ingrained in my mind, and I just I wasn't going to take him, but he picked me. I didn't pick him. He was 9 weeks old. I couldn't take him until he was 11 weeks old because that's too young to give them up, because it was a good breeder, actually. But I felt he was very unhappy being there, and I could sense it. And so at 11 weeks, I got him. But I was with about 7 or 8 other poodles, and they were all playing, they were frisky little things, and he crawled into my lap and looked at me and just put his head down. He was only less than a pound. And I knew
wow.
this would be my dog and an incredible therapy dog, because he's just changed my life. He changed my life.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you're very passionate about this. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to ask you a little bit about Tender Loving Zoo and how that came into effect.
Okay.
My guest is Nancy Stanley. She's written a book called Pillow with a Heartbeat, the heartwarming tale of a little dog who finds his big purpose. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We'll be right back.
My song, I'm strolling along. It's just me and my dog catching some sun.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Let's get it started. Let's get it started.
I'm Rich.
I'm Tim.
Join us on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, your home for motivation with a purpose, every Friday at 10 AM, where we attempt to inspire, motivate, and challenge you to live and work with purpose.
And solving the world's problems.
I don't think so, Tim. Join us Fridays at 10 for Motivation with a Purpose on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Spread the word. Your favorite shows are on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
But then I looked in your eyes, and I was no more a failure. You looked so wacky and wise, and I said, Lord, I'm happy because I'm just walking my dog, singing my song.
I could listen to some more of that music, Eric. That was cool. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. This is actually my first live show of this year. I'm joining you from England today. I'll be back in Seattle in a couple of days. And we're talking about a dog today, and I can't wait to get home to my lovely Dylan Thomas, my border collie. We're talking right now with Nancy Stanley. She's written a really cute book called Pillow with a Heartbeat, the heartwarming tale of a little dog who finds his big purpose. And he is a little chocolate poodle who helped a young girl through her chemo when she had leukemia. And Nancy, I know, is very passionate about using dogs therapy with patients. So I want to ask you, because I know you started Tender Loving Zoo, Nancy. Tell me a little bit about that and what kind of work you do with that.
Well, this was in 1982. And I was living in L.A. at the time, and I went to the zoo because I was working with baby gorillas at the time, and I saw this whole big group of physically challenged children that were in a group, and they were all looking at the animals. And when they first came in, they looked kind of like not too excited. But when they started looking at the gorillas from there, they lit up. Their whole demeanor changed. And I was thinking, my goodness, look what these animals do to these kids. If they could, they can do it, and they're not even touching them. Can you imagine if I brought some animals to these children, how it would be if they could actually have that tactile response? And so I moved to San Diego, and that's in 1982, and that's when I started the Tender Loving Zoo. And all I did was take $7,500 of my own. I bought a van, and I recruited some of my friends as helpers. And we persuaded a pet store to lend us baby animals. So they groomed them and got them all clean. And we took them over to this Revere school in San Diego, where this little girl I told you about was finally said her first word, a puppy. And from that moment on, I was getting requests from, well, the reason why I got requests is because we got into the front page of the New York Times. And it went to the Chicago Herald, and President Reagan read it while he was having breakfast and wrote me a letter. He said, Nancy and I are sitting here at the breakfast table, and what an amazing concept, animal therapy.
Wow.
I know, it's hanging on my wall. I'm staring at it as I'm talking
to
you.
I bet it's framed too.
I thought it was a joke, but it wasn't a joke. And we started getting requests from schools and hospitals and convalescent homes all over the country to see if I could help set up a project like this. And it was I made it into a nonprofit organization, and we set up about 52 centers, and now it's all over. You don't even have to do it. Everyone's doing it. It's wonderful, and the concept of pet therapy got out. And if I was in for it for the money, I'd probably be a millionaire today. But that wasn't the point. The purpose was to let people understand how much a dog or a rabbit or a cat, and we had them all. What a gift they bring to people. It's just that touching them and that love, that unconditional love that these little baby animals brought to all these people. So that's how I started it. And now with my book, with Pillow with a Heartbeat, I'm hoping that I can start over again. And this time I want to make money. but the concept is there. It's all about animal therapy and giving to people outside your own focus, and to pay back for all your blessings that you have, and you know, and not just keep them for yourself, but to share with everybody.
I know that you're not somebody who just talks about this. You actually do it. I read that you actually shaved your head once to make your best friend's daughter, Olivia, feel less embarrassed about losing hers to leukemia. I've heard of men doing that when their wives or sisters have lost their hair during chemo, but I've never heard of a woman doing it before. So why did you do that, and how did it make you feel?
Okay, well, I would be less than honest if I said that I really shaved my head. Mm-hmm. But the reason why it's in the book is because when I met this family, the first day I met them, I went to Michelle's house, and everybody, three girls and two boys and the father, had bald heads. And I thought it was the most remarkable thing. And so for the book, to just get the story out, how important it is to make people feel like you're part of it, I said that in the book. For that reason. But I tell you, if it happened to somebody and I knew it was going to save her life or make a difference, or, you know, at the time, I would have shaved my head. But it was so important to me that they did, that I put it in the book.
Along the way, to share about some of the animals that you've worked with. Do you have some favorite stories, favorite funny stories?
Funny or favorite? I have so many. It's been so, I do so much. You know, Truffles is a player. He makes up these games with the people. And the funniest thing he does, and he does it consistently with his tricks, is that he just goes through his whole repertoire. I don't even have to tell him. We go and see children, or we go to the homes for the elderly, and he gets in the middle of the floor, and they're yelling out, roll over, sneeze, do you have a cold, high five. And he just keeps doing this stuff and makes it. He knows. Whatever they want, he does. He's incredible. He does this hide-and-seek with them. He'll hide under a chair with his squeaky duck, and he'll keep squeaking. He doesn't stop squeaking it, but he thinks we don't know where he is, but his little tush is sticking out of the chair, wagging his tail. And as soon as you get closer, you go, I'm going to find you. His tail goes faster and faster, and he's squeaking. And then you say, gotcha, and he starts rolling over. I mean, he is really a clown.
Mm-hmm.
So he does this on
well,
his,
I know
on
you're doing great work with truffles. Tell us a little bit about the Make-A-Wish Foundation and what you do with them. What do you do with them as a wish granter?
Well, we meet the children, and they're all children that are going through life-threatening illnesses or they're in remission, and we go to meet them, and we ask them all kinds of questions of where they'd like to go if they could, who would they like to meet if they could, and we arrange wishes for them no matter what they want. We will get it, except for, you know, there's obviously things like they can't go watch the fighting in Afghanistan, but that would be, nobody asks for that. They want to go to Disney World. They want to meet a celebrity. They want makeovers for their room. They get it. They don't pay for it. Everybody, I mean, there's donations come in. We go, people are thrilled to give you something for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very easy time getting things donated because I bring truffles with me and they don't say no to him. They might say no to me, but they do not say no to truffles.
So I know also that you were an associate producer for a feature documentary film called Saving America's Horses, A Nation Betrayed.
Right.
What do you want us to know about that?
Well, it's horrific what they're doing to the wild Mustangs, thoroughbred, domesticated horses that are given away or sent out, you know, they don't go to adoption. They go to these kill buyers who bring them to Mexico and Canada, torture them. I mean, we have video of how they're being tortured. It was just on, I believe it was just on a CNN or something the other day about what they do to these. And they send them the meat to Europe as a delicacy. They take our horses and they've tortured them and then send them to Europe to eat. Like, this is such a great delicacy. And we're trying to stop it.
And these are horses that are wild, right, or have been abandoned?
Yes. There are so many wild horses that should not be taken off their land. They deserve to be there. And they're not starving and there's no lack of water. It's just that they're being cut off from all those things so they can take the horses and... It's a big money business, and it's disgusting.
So who is taking them off? I mean, how can they do that if the horses belong to the land? I mean,
well, I can't really say. I mean, the Bureau of Land Management is supposed to be protecting the wildlife. It doesn't look like that's what's being done, and they don't send the horses to Mexico, but they give them to people who do, or it's just not. Nobody knows how it's really happening, but we have so much documentation that it is happening, and it has to be stopped, and we're trying to get legislature to stop, not to open up the slaughterhouses here in the United States, and I think we're winning on that battle. We have a huge amount of rescuers and people who are affiliated with this cause that are making big headways, but it's not fast enough because every day thousands of horses are being tortured.
Right.
Can't
we're almost at the end of our segment, Nancy. What do you want listeners to know about, that you haven't already said about therapy dogs or truffles?
Well, first of all, I would like them to know where they could get my book.
Sure.
If they go to Amazon.com, they can order it, or any bookstore will order it, because I need this book out there, because I'm trying to get an animated film for children. Done, so everyone can see about pet therapy. That would make a huge... But I want people to know that they can all do something. They can all go on a mission and do something besides what they do on their normal day. And just one day a week or one day a month, go out there, and if they have an animal, a dog, go try to get the dog certified, and you'll see what... It's just an amazing thing that it does to you yourself as the owner of this pet.
That's a wonderful, wonderful way to give back.
It is.
People who really are in dire need. Nancy Stanley, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, too, and thanks for having me.
Yeah,
Take
and
care.
We can find out more about Nancy and her book at PillowWithAHeartbeat.com. www.thepodcastnetwork.com. Please stay with us. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we shall be joined by Liz Ballard. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Good news, Belgium. We're streamed worldwide at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. I'm talking with you from England today. We're doing a live show through Seattle. And I'm pleased to welcome now Elise Ballard. She's an actress, independent filmmaker, producer, and author. And she began her career in New York and Los Angeles. And her critically acclaimed directorial debut, Lord of the Weens, a documentary about the annual Wiener dog races in Texas, became a cult hit. Elise Ballard, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much.
Well, I want to say also you've written a book called Epiphany, True Stories of Sudden Insight to Inspire, Encourage, and Transform. And as I understand it, you had your own epiphany while you were acting in a play. That epiphany then led you to start asking others if they'd ever experienced similar breakthroughs. So tell me about your epiphany and how this began for you, Elise.
Well, I had an epiphany, as you said, doing research for a role I was doing. And the epiphany was that it compelled me to leave a marriage I was in that wasn't working. And my life was so different 2 months later after this moment. And at the time I had the epiphany, I didn't say, oh, I had an epiphany. It was in a moment I was released from this fear that I didn't even know I had. And so I was able to then take action to leave. And so 2 months later, my life was so different. And I woke up one day and just went, how did I get here? And my mind flashed back to this one moment that in an instant I knew everything had changed for me. So kind of in hindsight, I realized I'd had the epiphany. And so that's what happened. And I was like, that was an epiphany. That's what they call an epiphany. That, you know, I wondered if anyone else had them. And so I started asking about them, just as you said.
And you were surprised by how many people, and we're not talking about aha moments here, I should say this. You think an epiphany is something much deeper and stronger than that.
Well, I do. I mean, I'm just, you know, it's semantics basically, but for me the word epiphany just has a lot more resonance and it's mm-hmm. an ancient word, you know. So,
yeah.
So aha moments to me, I mean, it's a great word, and if people want to use it for that, they can. I don't want to tell people they have to use epiphany for these big life-changing moments, but for me I use this term because I'm talking about the big, big life-changing moments, not the everyday epiphanies that we have so much, you know?
I'm talking
about the ones that usually change your life. So,
you were surprised by when you were talking with people about what their epiphanies were, how many people had never shared them before. Because we tend to think, you know, if we have this big breakthrough, we're going to rush around and tell everyone. But so many people, you said, felt they were personal. And it surprised you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, a lot of people have never shared their epiphanies, and because they come in very personal ways, and they're very intimate stories, you know? I mean, frankly, I didn't tell people that I had an epiphany. I would just started asking them about theirs. I mean, I didn't want to talk about mine either. You know what I mean?
Well, I can relate to that, because as I was reading the book, I thought, well, well, what are some of my epiphanies, and did I ever share them? And I don't think I did.
I know, because they really come in very
personal way. You have a lot of stories in here, some from some very well-known people like, I mean, Desmond Tutu, Deepak Chopra, Alan McGraw, Christopher Lee, but also some unknown or lesser-known people, some regular working folk. And I know you don't have a favorite. I read that you don't have a favorite in here, but share one of the stories that maybe... I read that Maya Angelou was one of the stories that was inspirational to you.
Yes. Maya Angelou, you know, I'd never met her, and she graciously granted me an interview on the phone. And her takeaway line, before every single story, there's a quote that summarizes the wisdom or what that person learned from their epiphany. And hers is, "We are loved by love itself. There is nothing good that we can't do." And she was one of the last interviews I did right before I got her in, right under the wire, right before I had to turn in the book. And it just really struck me. It's really helped me. For whatever reason, I had this experience throughout the process, is that at different times in my life, different epiphanies affected me more deeply or were the ones that I focused on personally at that time in my life, depending on what was going on. And at the end of this project, you know, this epiphany came up for me, and it's just been something that I realized I had never focused on. The actual thought of "we are loved by love itself" and what that means to me, you know. And I mean, again, this is kind of I had a little personal epiphany, you know. It's, you know, so, but, and also, "there's nothing good that we can't do" has really helped me whenever I get upset or negative or overwhelmed or discouraged, you know, and feel like I can't do something, or, you know, there's no way I'm going to get everything done, or I get discouraged about what's going on in the world. That will come to mind, and it helps me get re-energized and remember the hope and the positivity and the beauty that's out there, and that really there's nothing good that we can't do, and that's true.
Yes, yes.
So for me, it's been a really...
I know you're a filmmaker at heart. It sounds as though doing these interviews actually changed your life and your perceptions to some extent.
Yeah. Definitely, a lot of them have, and I've worked. So I filmed, you know, I filmed about 30 of the interviews that are in the book, and other ones as well. And then the rest of them, I either did in person or I talked to them on the phone. And so I was getting to work with them. You know, I was getting to edit them on film and in writing them. And so in doing that, they're different. You know, they're very different. I tried to complement in the video. I put stuff in that you won't see in the book, and vice versa. And but, yeah, it's been a very different, unique process for me in writing all of these. And they absolutely have changed my life. They've taught me so much. And I utilize the wisdom that I get from everybody all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. How did you select the people that you put in the book? I know I was reading about Christopher Lee because I have to confess, you know, when I was a little kid, I had a terrible crush on Christopher Lee when he played in the vampire movies. How did you meet him?
Oh, Christopher. Well, Christopher, it's not the same Christopher Lee.
It's the same Christopher Lee.
No,
I thought it was a bit strange. Okay, all right, we'll forget that. Forget I said I had a crush.
Yeah, no, I was like, I was thinking, Christopher Lee's famous in England. Wow. You know, because I met him in Africa, this guy, and he's an Anglican priest. He's studying at Cambridge right now. But he was doing missionary work in Africa. But his story is highly dramatic and amazing. But and he's British, so, but anyway, yeah, he's not the same one. But how I picked people was like someone like Christopher Lee crawled in my van in Africa. We ended up in the same van, and I met, and I pulled out my camera, and he had a great story. So some people I met completely serendipitously, some people I met through friends, some of the people I knew, they're friends of mine, and I worked with them, or I worked with them, or they were colleagues of mine. You know, it was just, or they had inspired me by what they were doing in the world. Like, I admire everyone I talked to. I guess the main criteria was I admired them,
you know? Mm-hmm. And so, or I wanted to know what made them tick, because I find that epiphanies have some of our greatest wisdom. And when I see these people doing amazing things in the world, or they've done something that has directly affected my life for whatever reason, whether they did a film or a book or music, or they're doing nonprofits in the world that have affected me, or I've read articles, that whatever it was, and I would reach out to them because I wanted to know what some of their greatest wisdom was.
Right. I love that you say in the book that some of the narratives that they shared turned the kaleidoscope for me.
Yeah.
I love that expression.
Yes. Well, again, as you said, I'm a filmmaker, so everything for me, so much for me is visual, you know? And
yeah.
So, you know, that's what it does. It's like you're looking through life, you know, like a kaleidoscope where it's a certain design, and then you just barely tweak it, but then all the pieces fall in a different way, and you're seeing it in a completely different design, just as beautiful, if not more beautiful, right? And
mm-hmm.
and it, everything's the same, except something in you has just been tweaked, you know?
Yes, yeah.
And and then everything changes. It's a whole new picture.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. It's like, it just, you feel like it tweaks, but all of a sudden you see everything differently, or you see something deeper, or you see something more beautifully, or, you know, however you want to put it. Yeah, that's how, if you ever looked at a kaleidoscope as a kid, that's how I see these sort of working.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way of putting it, and does strike a very visual chord. And you say in the book that every epiphany included five things: listening, belief, action, and serendipity. And I just wanted to touch on action moment, because you said that every single person whose epiphany positively changed his or her life took action. Isn't that a key factor?
Yes, it's absolutely imperative, because people, you know, by definition, an epiphany is a moment of sudden or great revelation. That's the definition in the dictionary. So you can have an epiphany, and I talked to people who had epiphanies. They said, yeah, but if they didn't act on it, it didn't change their life, you know? So it was, the difference was in people, every single one of these people, when I asked about life-changing epiphanies, every single one of them took action on it. You don't just get them and just sit around with them. It compels you to take action, and these people all believed in them enough that they took action. And then the serendipity
right.
came into play. Most of the time, we don't know what the next step is, but you go ahead and take that first one.
Right. So tell us about the Epiphany Channel that you're putting, that supports this book. It supports your book, Epiphany.
Yeah, it's the website that I've set up. It's called epiphanychannel.com. And as I said, I film a lot of these interviews, so they're all living on this website under the people section. And you can go see everybody in the book's photos, bios, the interview. And in the book, there's the bio and a section called the interview, which is a little background on it. Because, you know, I shoot behind-the-scenes stuff. I love behind-the-scenes stuff. And whenever I read a book or see a movie, I go and research it. You know what I mean? Like, I love that.
Yeah.
So we put that in the book because that's what I like to do when I read a book. And so I also put links on the website to everybody's stuff so people can then further research these people if they want to. And then I also have a section where people can share their epiphanies with me. I'm still collecting epiphanies. I'm getting the most beautiful stories coming in. It's amazing. And you can also suggest people's epiphanies that you'd want to know about. It could even be your next-door neighbor or your parents or your child or people that are famous. It doesn't matter. Some of the people that people wrote in to me about or suggested, they're in the book, you know?
Yeah.
So so I'm getting that, so you can go do that. You can share your epiphanies with me. You can even film your epiphany and send me the link to it, and I can go watch it. And there's a blog where I talk about other stuff that's going on and, you know, all the different events that are happening with the book signings and stuff like that. So we're developing a community there, hopefully, for people to share and learn about epiphanies and share their wisdom and stories and, you know, just to have another a forum to sort of talk about these things. And, of course, we're on Facebook and Twitter, and you can go follow all of that on there as well.
Okay, so that's at epiphanychannel.com. Appreciate you sharing that with us. And I appreciate you being with us today as well, Elise.
Oh, I appreciate you having me on. It was such a pleasure.
And the book, again, for those who are interested, is called Epiphany: True Stories of Sudden Insight to Inspire, Encourage, and Transform. And Elisa shared some great stories in here, again, from people like Alan McGraw, Barry Manilow, Nell Newman, and some regular folks, too, some regular working folks. Very interesting and inspiring book. Thanks again, Elise Ballard.
Oh, thank you so much. It was an honor. I really appreciate it.
And I want to thank each of you for joining us today. We will be back live again next week. I'll be home in Seattle and joining you from the studio in Seattle. And be sad to say goodbye to my family, but I'm looking forward to coming home at the same time.
We look forward to having you back.
I'll see you all next week. And thanks for being with us.